Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I'm your host, Chip Patterson. And as we gear up for this big, big Week 10, a lot of conference title races, you know, big games that will determine that. Of course, we've got LSU, Alabama, we've got USC and Oregon. And as we have a couple times this season, it's time to check in with Paul Bessier, the general manager, founder, and creator of PredictionMachine.com. Paul, welcome back to the podcast. I got to ask you, you were telling me a little bit before, but this has just got to be the most hectic time of the year for you.
Yeah, October now trumps March in terms of the chaos for me, because not only do we predict every college football and NFL game on a weekly, if not daily basis, we're also dealing with the start of the NBA season, the start of the college basketball season, and trying to figure out what's going to happen with all 347 D1 teams. We're doing something with CBSSports.com projecting the NHL season as if it actually happened, and we just got done with baseball and starting to look at what's going on in the off season. So there's a lot of stuff running through my mind, but I can tell you for sure, especially as a guy who grew up a big Badgers and Packers fan, that football is still where our heart is and still what we do with most content with on the site.
How would the Carolina Hurricanes have fared if the season had gone? Do you know that yet in the prediction?
I'll get you their record in a second. Yeah, I've got all that information that we're checking out on the site. But I can tell you that for sure I know that Minnesota got off to a great start. I guess they got off to a great start last year, but then they floundered down the stretch. But this year they picked up two of the maybe three or four best free agents in the offseason to add to that team. And then I believe the Islanders hadn't won more than one or two games yet. Through about 3 weeks of the simulations, the season would have started on October 11th.
Oh, okay. All right, I got you. Well, we started last time. I asked Paul what was something that has happened on the field. Like, where's an area where they've been surprised, where the predictilator might have been more difficult to call the outcomes. And last time it was the Pac-12, which of course made sense when you've got all the new coaches, the new teams, lots of changeover. And so in the time since then, is it still the Pac-12, or where have you been the most surprised in college football?
I really want to focus on really one team, I guess, because the Kansas State Wildcats, we thought, were a bit of an aberration to have the 10 wins that they did last season. They were outscored by about 3 or 4 points per game last year and outgained by almost 70 yards per game in the games in which they went on to win 10 of during the 2011 season. So it was very difficult for us to expect anything other than some kind of regression. And I go back and look at what Vegas had for the over-under win total line at the sports books before the season for Kansas State, and the line was 7. We actually had the over, so I feel good about that. I don't feel good about the fact we still only thought this team was going to win 7.5 games. So it wasn't close to our expectation here. But, you know, it's typical Bill Snyder football, and I think this is the best team he might have ever had, because not only do they, you know, they don't have the talent of the SEC school, but they don't make mistakes. They have great special teams. The defense is strong, and the offense just does everything right. They play smart football. They play disciplined football. And they do have a lot of talent that they procured from other rosters for the most part, with transfers from the junior college and other FBS ranks. So I give Bill Snyder credit. I think this might be the best job he's ever done at coaching, and I'm glad he's getting the credit now. I just wish we would have foreseen that before the season, because we had this team as about a 7-5 or 8-4 team, and not what we've seen so far is what we think is not only the third best team in the country in our power rankings, but the team that out of all 123 of the other teams in the nation would be most likely to beat Alabama on a neutral field.
And you mentioned the JUCOs a little bit, and I was going to ask you, because you have data that you input into the Predictilator, the prediction machine, and do you think that the use of junior college players or transfer players, not just here, but maybe even for odds makers or Vegas in general, is that one of the things that's very, very tough to predict how these transfers would work out, or is it the same as a recruit?
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. You made the point I was about to make, and I apologize for stepping over that a little bit, but that's exactly it. Anytime you have a player for which you do not have much information on what he has done previous to this, stepping into a critical role. For instance, we didn't think Texas A&M was going to be very good this year. They overhauled their coaching staff. They had a new quarterback. They lost a lot off of their back seven on the defensive side of the ball. The front four on both, or the lines on both of the team from last year to this year were pretty similar. But going into SEC play with all that turnover, we didn't think that team was going to be nearly as good as it was. But because Johnny Manziel is some freak, and that we didn't quite know or catch on to that based on what he had done as a high school senior and junior, it gave us a little bit of a trouble trying to figure out what that team was going to be like. So whether it's a transfer or a recruit, you know, we can go off of some things that they've done in high school or how they've been ranked by people that have consistently shown an ability to do that successfully or professionally. But that's about it. And then we just have to learn as the season goes on. And I'd say Kansas State and Texas A&M, to a little bit of a lesser degree, have been two teams that have really pointed out the value of those kind of players.
If you go to predictionmachine.com, one of the things, Paul does have a blog there, and his most recent post hit on what seems to be the hot topic right now. As Kansas State, like we mentioned, continues to win, Notre Dame continues to win, Alabama, their undefeated record will be tested, but you look at that Oregon, Alabama, Notre Dame, and Kansas State, and everybody, especially with a four-team playoff in the future. And Paul, I think that is one of the things that's sort of fueling this discussion, is that we know that there will be four teams that can face off, and so we want to imagine that maybe there will be the chaos of everybody finishing undefeated and, you know, everyone can scream. But in reality, and your blog post points this out, that the chances of that happening are not very good.
Yeah, I mean, there's still 18 games to be left to be played by all of those teams that you just mentioned among the top four. So the chances of those teams going 18-0 is only 1.2%. That's it. And you think about it, that might sound very low considering the fact that these teams have won all their games to this point, but we just lost we lost Ohio and Rutgers and Florida last week and Oregon State. And they were teams that, in all of those cases, that team was favored in almost every case by at least a touchdown or so. And yet they all lost their games. Winning 18 straight games, which is what we're asking these four teams to do over the rest of the season, isn't very likely. And they kind of think of it to the degree, if you flip a coin 10 times in a row, it's very unlikely that you get heads every time. Well, these aren't exactly 50-50 tries, but most of these games, the favorite, which in every one of these games that's remaining, the current undefeated team would be favored, but in most of those games, the favorite's still only 65 to 75% likely to win. It's very difficult, even if you have a coin that is heads 75% of the time, to hit 18 straight heads when you're flipping that coin. It's just difficult. It's not probable, and it's actually far more probable, 15 times more likely, that all four of those teams wins than all four of those teams goes undefeated the rest of the way. Actually, that all four of those teams loses at some point, then that all four of those teams go undefeated the rest of the way.
Right, and the one of those games, you mentioned 65 to 75%. I'm looking at it now, and the 65.7%, that is the Notre Dame at USC game at the end of the season for the Fighting Irish. Just sort of your personal opinion, do you think that Notre Dame will go undefeated?
Well, they're the more likely team of anybody outside of Alabama. Alabama, I think most people would agree with this, and I'm sure we'll get to the LSU game in a second, but Alabama is the most likely team in the country to go undefeated. They've got five games remaining. They're 55% likely to go undefeated. They've been number one in our power ranking since before the start of the 2011 season and every week since then. And if they win this weekend, they will be 80% likely to finish the year undefeated with the four remaining games they have to play, including one against Western Carolina, but then also including one in the SEC championship game. So Alabama's in a great position there. But after that, and I think most people have kind of conceded that it's very likely still, whether it's Alabama or not, that we see an SEC team in the BCS title game. And and after Alabama then taking that spot, the next most likely team is the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. But my take on that right now is, even though they've got three pretty easy games coming up, there's still a 60% chance that that team loses, and only a 40% chance that they win all of their remaining games. So there's no other team outside of Alabama that is more likely than not to end the year undefeated.
Right, and then you get into, of course, the other aspects of it, which are, you know, will Notre Dame be able to go undefeated? They don't play on that last Saturday, and then they take on all these other obstacles as far as trying to get in there opposite Alabama in the national championship game. Obviously, those stray a little bit further from the prediction machine model. Is there any way to take into account, other than just injuries, but just the general attrition? Because Dennis Dodd, he and I always talk about how people say November's weird, but there is an explanation for why November gets weird in college football, and it's that these are 18 to 20-year-old young men, and this season, it's a brutal beating on your body, and you can get worn down, you can hit a wall. Like, it is possible that, you know, when people say letdown, they're not necessarily just using cliches, it's just a blanket statement. Is there any way to take into consideration the wear that a season can have on a team?
Yes is the answer, though it doesn't play a big role in terms of our numbers. My take on that would be that, first of all, schedules in September are much easier, and there aren't going to be many upsets because the schedules don't even allow for many upsets. You have almost 100% wins projected when the Alabamas of the world take on the Western Carolinas of the world at that point of the season. And then also, they're not considered that great of an upset if it happens in September or October, but when we get this far and you only see a few teams that are undefeated, then it is, all of a sudden appears as though it's more of an aberration that it is a big upset than it really had been a big upset, just because the team had won its games up until this point. And I think that no matter what the time of year, this kind of chaos and what we might see this week is just as likely as just about any other time of the year, given the schedule. It just happens to be that we've built up in our minds these four teams as the best four teams, and if they lose, it just seems that much more surprising.
Right, and like you said, last week we went from 11 undefeateds to 6, so it's very possible we could get that cut in half again this weekend. Go ahead.
I did want to just address one. I wanted to kind of tie this all together with one final point that I didn't work in there up to this point. The three teams behind Alabama are very interesting to me because Notre Dame is the most likely to go undefeated. Oregon, to me, is the second best team in the country, yet it's Kansas State that would be the most likely team to win over Alabama on a neutral field, and actually Kansas State that would be favored over Oregon on a neutral field. So it's very interesting to see those three teams. When it's all said and done, it's not very likely that all three of them are undefeated at the end of the year. But if we are in having that conversation, an equal case, I think, essentially could be made for any of the three of those to be the second best team in the country, at least second most deserving team in the nation when it comes to the BCS title game.
The power rankings do a great job of sorting out like what you said, which is not necessarily who's going to win, but who you all believe are the best teams in the country. And the power rankings still really like Florida State, but the power rankings like Florida State more than, say, the BCS computers do. And that was another point that I was interested to hear you elaborate on, is how, while people might hear the term computer rankings, it's very different than necessarily prediction machine or other simulation models or other ranking-based programs.
Yeah, I appreciate that you give me the opportunity to talk on that, because we're basically the opposite of the computers that are used in the BCS formulas. First of all, we aren't allowed to know how those formulas are constructed, which I think is a little silly at this point. But yet we know for sure that the formulas are not allowed to take into consideration margin of victory, anything that happens on the field outside of a win or a loss. And so strength of schedule and where the game is played can play a role in that, but that's it. For us, we completely ignore wins and losses for the most part, and just look at the players on the teams, the coaching staffs and the rosters, and try to determine, when we simulate all 124 teams against each other, who would beat whom, would beat whom, would beat whom, and which teams would be favored over the greatest percentage of teams out there. And that's where we end up with Alabama at number one. Is that, you know, a mind-blowing or some kind of surprising outcome to be heard? No, by no means. Everybody, I think, would think that Alabama is the number one team in the country, but we validate that by saying that. Oregon's at number two. The computers in the BCS formula only have them at number five because they can only look at what's happened so far this year. We look at in terms of wins and losses, and they can't look forward, and they can't say that Oregon has won the first half of games 290-56 so far, so when they have their starters in the game, that they're one of the best teams in the country, but they take their starters out, and if they wanted to, they could win by even more impressive numbers. They only can look at wins and losses, so it's a completely opposite kind of perspective that we have, and I think it's far more appropriate for evaluating the best teams. It's not necessarily appropriate, though, for evaluating who deserves to be in certain situations, because if you lose, you lose, you had your chance, and that's one of the things that makes college football so great.
Yeah, exactly. And Florida State, man, they just could not put up, they could not get that first down against NC State. And you're right, a team that in so many other ways, you look at the Seminoles and you think, borderline top five, definitely top 10 style talent. But you lose that game, and that changes your ceiling from playing in Miami in the second week to playing in Miami on New Year's Day. Very, very different, very quickly. It's cool, though. I mean, like you said, it's one of the things that makes college football so great.
Exactly. Well said.
We wanted to also, of course, look at what we have in the weekend ahead here at Week 10, and let's just dive right in. Alabama and LSU, what is sort of your read on the game? I'm just sort of interested to hear your pick, but then also what the machine's been telling you.
Sure. I mean, mine's going to be similar to the machine. I've been doing this for 9 years professionally. There's enough of me in the engine for it to basically be my representative of me anyway. But there's also the point where whenever I have a gut reaction that seems like the machine might be wrong, the machine's right far more often than I am. So I'll speak on behalf of it, I guess, here, as I typically do, and say that, it looks like a great defensive battle with two of the top five teams in the nation that will have a lot of pros playing on the field, and ultimately should be a competitive game and low scoring. And while Alabama has a significant edge pretty much across the board, I think I'll still be tuning in to watch and see if it can remain close. And in the numbers, there's a couple of things I want to point to quickly. First of all, it just blows my mind that these two teams have zero common opponents. And in November, for two divisional teams in the same conference to not have played the same team yet at any point in the year is very surprising to me, so we can't go on that. And the fact that the home field advantage is essentially irrelevant here. Both of these teams are very consistent. Our predicted score in this game would only be about 1 to 2 points different if it were played in Tuscaloosa. So I don't think LSU is going to be winning because it plays in Baton Rouge. They might win if they hit one or two big plays, because that's how close this game is. And I don't know how Vegas can justify a 41.5-point total line, because 36 total points were scored in the two games that they played last year. And with elite defenses winning over elite offenses in college football, as they have for 6 or 7 years now, pretty consistently in and out of the SEC, we like Alabama's elite defense to win a defensive battle 23-14. 70% of the time, Alabama wins straight up. It's about a 9-point margin that's in line with Vegas, but far fewer points than they're currently expecting, with the difference being that Alabama is basically a little bit better in just about everything, and then a lot better when it comes to the passing game.
A lot better when it comes to that passing game. What's your read on McCarron? Because it seems as though, obviously, I kind of hate the game manager discussion. I think it's straying away from, honoring how much he's been able to improve. Obviously, he's got a little bit of a new system. Have you been impressed with McCarron? Do you think that he is one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC?
Yeah, I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and I think he should be considered among the top two or three quarterbacks in college football with respect to NFL prospects. What's interesting about the SEC to me is, aside from the just complete anomaly and freak of nature that Cam Newton was at the quarterback position in the SEC, because the defenses and really the running games tend to dictate the headlines, and because there's so many great athletes on the perimeter, the quarterbacks seem to be completely overshadowed year in and year out, at least over this 6 or 7 year stretch that the SEC has been dominant. And yet there have been some very good quarterbacks from the SEC, A.J. McCarron being one of the best of those. I think he should be right toward the front of the Heisman conversation. He's one of the most efficient players in the country. He's got a great offensive line and great playmakers, but he's still making the right decisions, not turning the ball over. And I think he's one of the main reasons that Alabama not only wins this game, but the national championship. And I bet they won the national championship last year. He's a great player that doesn't get nearly enough credit.
Okay, I found this because you mentioned it, and I was going to ask. I was like, this definitely was Paul. Because sometimes in the stream of following Twitter and lots of different news sources, you catch things. And then this was, if you can follow Paul on Twitter at Predict Machine. And yesterday, against common opponents this year, LSU and Alabama have exactly the same record and have scored and allowed exactly the same number of points. Which is totally true, like you said, because there's no common opponents. But I remember when I saw it was one of those, like, wrinkle of the brow, like, wait a second.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a tweet more that has generated more feedback or more retweets than that one. I immediately got a bunch of feedback, and the people who got it, who knew they hadn't played it any of the same opponents yet, were retweeting it. But the people who thought that meant that all of a sudden LSU was going to cover or win this game were retweeting it until they realized that it was because they haven't played any common opponents. It just blows my mind. You're divisional opponents, and you haven't played any of the same teams yet in November.
How is the live scorecaster going, and is that something that you are overseeing specifically? What's sort of the background on that? I don't think we've talked about that.
Yeah, no. Again, I'm glad you appreciate the fact that you want me to bring that up. It's Live Scorecaster is our app. It's a free app. You can download it in the iTunes store. You can go to PredictionMachine.com and see it with the machine itself. You get to follow along with 50,000 simulations and a chart after every single play. We have it. It's not only is the application free. We have at least a free game, if not two, for every single day for which there's games. It's the NBA, the NFL, and college football. So we will have it free for that LSU Alabama game. I'm going to be tweeting about that because I'm sure it'll be interesting after every big play to see how important that play was to the course of the game. Yeah, you know, fourth down conversions, whether or not it helped the team whether it improved the team's chances to win, or a 2-point conversion, or a missed field goal, or an interception. What kind of impact did those have on the games? And if I can share a quick anecdote, the main reason I think that I built this is the game over complex. Sitting and watching Packer games on Sunday afternoons with my dad growing up, at some point, he would say in the third or fourth quarter when the Packers were losing that the game was over, that there's no chance the Packers have a winning, that it's over. And it was his way of justifying the Packers actually losing, because he knew before the end of the game that it was going to happen. Well, now I can turn to him and say, hey, Dad, you know, just because they missed that field goal and they're still losing this game doesn't mean they're going to lose. They still have a 48% chance of winning. And I don't know if it shuts them up, but at least I can have some kind of reaction to some of his comments along those lines, and really put things in perspective based on those 50,000 simulations of the rest of the game as to how likely either team really is to win.
That's awesome. That's a very cool story. You're right, because that's it. I forgot what it was. I follow along, and I saw one update. It was in the last week, but the game over moment might have been when I saw a 99.9% chance of somebody winning.
I've never seen a 99.9% come around. Though I can tell you that the San Diego Chargers on Monday night, when they were up 24-0 with 10 minutes left to go in the third quarter, were about 96% likely to beat the Denver Broncos and lost. That's the closest I've ever seen to a lock that turned around. But that just shows you how impressive that feat, how unlikely that feat was.
Oh yeah, that was a bad collapse by the Chargers. What's the okay? Let's also go across the country to the Pac-12. What is the machine's read on Oregon USC? Obviously, the if you look at it, things that we've mentioned before, Oregon has not had to put together 60 minutes yet, and USC had like 70 plays, I think, in that loss to Arizona. What are things saying in the machine as far as that game goes?
Yeah, USC is going to be by far the most talented team and best team that Oregon's played so far this season, and that Oregon will likely play during the course of its regular season, and we're still projecting it as they might potentially play that game again. And what we see in the numbers is that this is going to be relatively close, and it's actually even closer than the LSU-Alabama game, both in terms of the percentage and in terms of the margin. Vegas seems to agree with that. It's a 9.5-point or so point line with Alabama, and it's about a 7.5 to 8-point line with Oregon, but we have it as a 6-point game. 37-31 is the projection. Oregon does win, and they do so about 60% of the time, but that's as close to, or a little over 65% of the time. That's as close to a coin flip as I think the Ducks are going to see the rest of the way. Or USC, and I think you and I talked about it before the season, looked like it could easily be the best team in the country. They weren't incredibly deep, and so injuries have hurt them because of that, but they still have talent at every single position. They've got elite playmakers. They've got speed on the defensive and offensive side of the balls to be able to compete with Oregon, and I think in that sense, they're the closest thing to an SEC team that the Ducks will see until potentially the BCS championship game. And because of that, it ends up being competitive. It ends up being close, and I think it's going to be a shootout, but that Oregon can't quite get away from USC and really pull away like a lot of people think they will.
How crazy is it to think, because I agree with you, I mean, there is so much talent on that USC roster. It is A little wild to think that they might not win that division, because if they lose here and pick up that third conference loss, then they open it up. Obviously, Arizona only has three conference losses, but UCLA and Arizona will be playing. Arizona State plays Oregon State. And there's the Pac-12 is, last time we talked, you said it was the most, you know, one of the most surprising conferences. Yep. And I did a feature for CBSSports.com today called The Conference Title Race Reset, and just sort of, you know, look at what the games are ahead, what the standings are. And that blows my mind to think that the Trojans might not play for the Pac-12 title.
Well, and that was one of the main reasons we talked about it as being a surprise last time, because we had, before the year when we did our preview, we had Oregon winning the division by the North by three games, and USC winning the South by three games, and we thought maybe that Stanford might have a say. It wasn't Oregon State, it wasn't, you know, UCLA or Arizona, or it was more likely Utah, if anything, that had a say in terms of the it is outside of Oregon and USC. But now, technically, especially with a game coming up this weekend between Oregon and USC, even though they're not in the same division, both division races are still up for grabs, and we didn't think that was going to be the case at this point in the year.
I definitely didn't. Not at all.
Yeah, we didn't, yeah.
What's, aside from those two games, send you out of here on this, are there any games across the board just in this weekend when you were running the simulations and the predictions that the results really surprised you?
I think this could be a weekend in which there are several upsets. I've heard other people say that so far about that, but it's kind of to the point, as we talked about before, that not because necessarily just because of the attrition or the physical toll that these games have taken on the players, but also because we've already built some teams up in our mind and don't realize that their opponents are just as good, if not better. There could be a lot of teams that people aren't expecting to win that win outright, and one of the teams that we're predicting to upset its opponent more likely than not is Michigan State, hosting Nebraska, coming off of a big win at Wisconsin. In overtime, we think the Spartans will be able to beat the Cornhuskers in what is another important game for that Big Ten race. And I think that could be very interesting. UCLA, Arizona, as you alluded to earlier, is very interesting. There's a lot of very competitive games that could ultimately see many upsets across the board. It's not going to be those two games that I think are going to be the only highlights at the end of the weekend. We could see some chaos throughout the rest of the season as well, or the rest of the country as well.
He is Paul Basir. He is the creator, general manager, founder of PredictionMachine.com. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Predict Machine. Paul, I really appreciate it. This is the listeners love it. I know I get to see that, but I selfishly also enjoy our chat. So thank you once again.
Hey, as do I. Thanks, man.
All right, appreciate it. Remember, you can get all the CBSSports.com podcasts from the iTunes store for free 99, and you can go and find all of the Prediction Machine's picks straight up at the CBSSports.com expert picks. And be sure to keep it with CBSSports.com. You can stream LSU and Alabama live in HD on the site Saturday night with Vern, Gary, and Tracy. Kickoffs at 8 o'clock. Thanks so much for tuning in.